But last night was that was deserving. That was quite a thing. So that the Bruins last night, we're gonna do a bunch of we'll do a bunch of Patriots this hour as well. Bob Sosi standing by, so we'll take your thoughts on everything. But back to the phones now. Here, Brian in Maine last night on the Celtics. Go ahead, Brian.
Felga, you're selling this all wrong. Worse than the flops that Smart did. The first time he fell when they called the first foul on Harden, he clearly flopped and got an elbow in the air. That's why he went down. The second one, the ref picked up the ball, walked right over to Smart and Harden, told them both either what, I don't know what he said, probably cut it out or whatever, then walked back away, and Harden proceeds to run straight into Smart towards the baseline.
Right.
Instead of going left or right, he goes right over him.
Right.
That's not Smart's fault.
We already said that. The second one was all... I think the second one Harden did on purpose.
So
I think he's proven a point on the ref.
So you're saying, Brian, that on both of those, there's no way Marcus Smart could have kept his feet?
On the second one, no. He hit him three times before he went down.
Stop it.
Three times he ran into him before he fell.
So he just couldn't.
Right.
He had to go down. There was no way he could have kept his feet there.
He bumped into him three times. He hit him hard once, took two more steps forward, hit him two times in that time, and then he fell over.
Go back and watch it again. It was the Nesty plunge. But I'm not blaming him. That's a Smart winning play. And
he does tend to go up before he goes down. Do you ever notice that?
Smart?
Sometimes on the flops. Like, he throws his body
in the air
backward, so he goes up before he goes down.
He's
the last one, the second one, have you ever been, like, playing pickup basketball or something, and you just keep getting fouled, and you get frustrated, and then you just completely, obviously, foul the guy who keeps fouling you?
Yes.
Just to let him know?
Yeah, sure.
That's what I think Harden did last night.
I'm with you. Because that's just what Harden is, isn't he?
Like, Harden just said, "I'll show you. You want to see what a real foul is? You want to see what an offensive foul? I'm going to show you." There was no way they weren't going to call the second one. It was blatant.
He ran right into him. I mean, I know. I'm just telling you, Smart could have kept his feet. So it's, you know, it's an embellishment. It's a flop. The first one was a joke. But again,
like I said, I really never saw a good angle of the first one.
ESPN,
TNT did not do a good job with
it. No, horrible. But again, I blame Harden. I blame D'Antoni. And I give Marcus Smart and the Celtics full credit. Just don't kid a kidder, okay? Please. He's a flopping, faking cheater. That's just what he does. The fact that Harden didn't know it or wouldn't be aware of it, or Dan, you know, just the way D'Antoni coaches. It's just run and gun,
right.
Chuck and duck, and there's nothing else that they do well. There's not defending. There's not smart situational play. And the way Brad Stevens slow played that whole thing at the end, I just thought was brilliant, where he's going for two and making Houston inbound the ball and just seeing if they could stand up to the pressure, and they couldn't. Of course they couldn't. Ryan in the car has a thought on the Bruins. Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, I want to jump on this McQuaid thing. This overpaid loser is coming back from a broken leg, for one. So mark this down. He's going to put us on the penalty kill more times, you know, than anyone on this team has, coming back trying to overcompensate for his time being lost and just being rusty in general. It makes me sick to my stomach that this guy's coming back.
So McQuaid's no loser, Ryan. He's a good Bruin and a tough guy. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Adam McQuaid. He's just a sixth defenseman. So so sometimes he's on nine, sometimes he's on the ice. And
sure.
That's what he is. Like, what is this? And I love that Cassidy is the coach and he's not kowtow. Because, again, if Claude were here, McQuaid's playing these last two, and someone else is up there because Claude's got to get his guys on
Grizzlick
the ice.
Would have been sent to the ECHL
absolutely
by now,
right.
Let alone Providence.
Absolutely. So look, if someone's not earning the ice, McQuaid's on there. But sometimes McQuaid should play. Sometimes he should be on nine, and that's just what he is. You should be bending over backwards to get Adam McQuaid onto the ice, and that's, you know. And I'm glad they're not. I think under the previous coach, they would be.
And I think the caller is... Do you remember the Ottawa series last year in the playoffs, what they went through with it in terms of their defensive core?
They have, at one point, without four of their top six.
Four or five, you know, were banged up. They're going to need Adam McQuaid.
Absolutely.
He's going to be part of this. He's going to be part of their depth. They're going to need these guys to be available and be around. This is a pretty good team. I mean, you were gone last week. That was my opening thought last week, was just how impressed I've been with the overall play of this team.
Paul, they haven't had this good of a record in three going on 4 years. They have a record that is comparable. They call it points percentage in the NHL.
Right.
Their point percentage is better now than it was the year they won the cup, and it's equal to what it was when they went to the cup in 13. I mean, they haven't played this well over this extended period of time in three going on 4 years.
Yeah, and I give Cassidy a lot of credit. I think, you know, I don't know exactly how it all unfolded, but when you look at the results of the goaltender situation,
save the season.
You have to give him a lot of credit for that.
Save the season. No question about it.
You know, I mean, I don't know if it lit a fire under Tuca, but he's been a different guy.
Shea in Hyde Park. What do you got, Shea, on the Celtics?
Yeah, so I was wondering if I can get you guys' take on Jason Tatum. I get a lot of feedback, and everybody's talking about Ben Simmons. They even saying it like, you know, it's a runaway. He's going to win Rookie of the Year. But I feel like a lot of people aren't giving Jason Tatum his due respect.
Around here?
Yeah.
You don't think people are giving him his due? There are people around here, a lot of people around here. I usually face them in McCarthy's seat there that say they wouldn't trade
Anthony Davis
or anybody. Jimmy Stewart says he wouldn't trade him for anybody.
Yeah, so to say he's not getting his due is absurd.
No, but then why is Ben Simmons the runaway for Rookie of the Year then?
I don't know.
So maybe you're not giving Ben Simmons his due.
No, Ben Simmons is a good player, but I mean, look at Philly, though, and look at the consistency with Jason Tatum.
What difference does it make that? So that should be points in Simmons' favor. He's not on as good a team, and he's doing that.
He's doing that, right? But then when you see him without Embiid, then things aren't going great. They have Redick. They have an improved squad. They're losing it.
But they're all young.
Tatum is surrounded by a much better cast. Would you please? Is Ben Simmons playing with Kyrie Irving and Al Horford?
And listen, again, I don't pretend to be Mr. NBA. I don't watch all of these games. I don't see these guys play all the time. But to sit there and watch a guy mix in with Embiid and Fultz and all the other young guys, Covington, they don't have Kyrie Irving. They don't have an Al Horford. They don't have guys. You know, J.J. Redick is a good, solid player. He's a complimentary piece. They don't have a veteran guy to lean on. When they have to win a game, it's Ben Simmons. They don't do that to Jason Tatum. I'm not taking anything away from Tatum. I love this pick, the way he started the season, the way he shoots the ball, everything about him. But he's able to feed off of a very good team that he has not relied on. I mean, what's a good Jason Tatum game? Like 7 for 9 from the floor.
Yeah, like 18
right?
points.
Yeah, I got a buddy, rebounds, my buddy Kenny in the office. He tells me all this stuff all the time. He's one of the guys you'd make fun of, Mike, a lot.
Like
he's a green teamer to the core, and he would tell you that they don't ask Tatum to carry the load. Right now, he's not ready to do that. Ben Simmons is being asked to do that most nights, and then he says when he doesn't have Embiid, what happens? Yeah, what happens? It's all on him. You know, and he's still getting these triple doubles. And I don't care who wins the Rookie of the Year. That doesn't, you know, awards. I don't really care who wins the award. The Celtics have an excellent player on their hands in Tatum. That's the only thing that anybody should be concerned about.
Thought, McCarthy?
Kid's a stud, Jason Tatum. I mean, obviously Ben Simmons is going to get more opportunities because he's not playing with Kyrie and Horford. Here's what I want to see the Celtics do. At some point this year, I'd like to see them lean on Tatum a little bit more. They don't need to win every night. Let's see what this kid can do. Let him take over a game in the fourth quarter. Because you know what? Every time it seems like Jason Tatum has an opportunity to impact the game in the fourth quarter, it seems like he comes through. It seems like he has that it factor that Jaylen Brown doesn't have. Let's lean on this guy a little bit more in the fourth quarter. Not every night.
Close game. He did a little of that in Charlotte the other night.
He did a little of that in Charlotte. 10 points in the fourth quarter. He's one of the big reasons they won that game. I want to see them go to him more in the second half of the year. Just to see what this kid's got. Granted, he's 19. Go to him a little bit more.
Let's continue here on Agenda Free Friday with Sosi. He's standing by. We'll do it after the CBS Sports Minute. Brought to you by Brigham Gill Chrysler Jeep. Roberto, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, Mike and Paul. What's up, Bob? Boston Herald reunion here.
It is tremendous.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Sorry, Robert, a couple
you
things.
You got those high school scores yet, Mike?
Yeah, right?
I say, were you guys typing in Agat over here?
Yeah.
Friday night's high school results?
Yeah, Mike, you got the Braintree score.
So, a couple things here for you.
Yes, sir.
One is Brady Garoppolo. The other is James Harrison. Where do you care to start?
Wherever you want.
Okay. Yeah. Start with James
Your
Harrison.
Show.
James Harrison. Why? I guess I know why they did this. I can't stand the guy. I couldn't stand the guy 2 days ago, so I can't stand him today. But I feel like Patriots fans are okay with James Harrison being on the team, and it feels sort of off because we've done nothing but 10 years of hate this guy and not respect this guy and not want to have anything to do with him. But now he's here. So how should we feel about it?
Well, I understand the sentiments that have been held by Patriot fans for a long time regarding James Harrison, because even before I became the broadcaster for the Pats, although I respected him as a player, wasn't necessarily at the top of my favorites list, nor was he as a Pittsburgh Steeler once I got into it with the Patriots. But I think you recognize the need for this team, short in the front seven in particular, that position. And I don't see him as an outside linebacker per se, but more as a rush end and potentially somebody who can try to help set the edge, especially if you get a playoff matchup with a Kansas City,
so you think
for
he can
example.
Be a factor in the run defense?
Well, and that's assuming there's something left there. He had a good playoffs last year, but how much have we seen? He's only had 30, 40 snaps all season long. He keeps himself in tremendous shape. We'll say that for him. His workout regimen is legendary. But, I think it's two-pronged. I don't think it's just to get after the passer, but I think he is a guy that certainly brings something they haven't been able to get from Eric Lee and some of the other young guys they've had at that position. And that's not to allow those perimeter runs, because they've been hit by Kenyon Drake, LeSean McCoy, in recent weeks.
Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell, exactly. Those guys who, especially if they spin out and they go backside from a play. And I think that's a concern moving forward, especially when you've got Kansas City on the horizon, a team that really gashed them in week one.
What do you think, Paul, Dasani?
Yeah, no, I think the same thing. It left a bad taste in my mouth. I mean, I don't really have a lot of respect for the way he's acted over the years. Now, on the field, I've had plenty of respect for the player. I think he's probably pretty close, if not done, but it absolutely fills a need. You and I are in lockstep in terms of running the ball and stopping the run and the lack of importance that those things are. But at some point, you can't just allow teams to run the ball at will against you.
Is he a run defender?
That's all he's going to do. He's going to stand out there, I think, and try to set the edge and use that unbelievable strength that he has. I think people look at this as he's a situational pass rusher.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think it's the opposite. I think he's going to be a situational run stopper.
Huh.
I think he's going to play on early downs, probably play only like 15, 20 snaps, but come on. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays a ton on Sunday against the Jets. Empty the tank. What's he got? What can we ask him to do? What is he incapable of doing? And then figure it out. Because I think it's a game on Sunday they're probably going to have in control. But they can't allow these guys, and Bob is absolutely right, that their inability to set the edge has been eye-opening, because that's never been a problem, really, since the really early days of Bill Belichick being here. I can't remember them not being able to handle the run on the perimeter, and that's been an issue pretty much all season.
Yeah, and if they had problems early in the season, like 2014, they solved those problems before too long. And to Paul's point, too, about playing time, I guess I liken it somewhat to Steven Jackson.
Yep.
When they got him at the end of 15 and they ran him out there play after play after play against Miami.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, hopefully James Harrison isn't taking handoffs from Tom Brady. So hopefully it goes a lot better. But I can see that where they want to find out right away. I mean, they've got one game with which to work to know what they'll have going into the postseason.
And it should be noted, we don't have the official injury report yet, but Eric Lee was not spotted at practice today. He's a guy that's played a lot of snaps on the edge, Mike, as a stand-up sort of, tweener, outside linebacker, defensive end type. Harrison may be forced to play even more than we know.
Okay, second question.
Mm-hmm.
The Brady Garoppolo thing, which, because Garoppolo's played so well out there, and Brady has had a, spotty month. I don't know what adjective you want to use there, but below his standards, call it that. He's
un-Brady-like.
Yeah, he's thrown interceptions in five straight games, which is his longest streak since 2002. He's thrown six in the last five games. So Brady is sort of, again, un-Brady-like, and Garoppolo's playing so well. So it's fired that whole thing right back up, Bob. Is that fair?
It's natural. I mean, I guess all is fair in sports talk radio.
Thank you.
But especially when it comes to the Patriots and the situation involving Tom and Jimmy over the last few years. But I think that it's ignorant to try to make an argument that Tom Brady has been Brady-like compared to what we're accustomed to the last 4 or 5 weeks. I don't think he's been as bad as some portray his performance. Did he make a couple of bad decisions and poor throws over the last couple of weeks against Pittsburgh?
Oh, the first half
as
in Buffalo,
well as
I thought he was
Buffalo.
Wretched. I get the first half in Buffalo, I thought he sucked.
But here's the point I want to make about it. I think going back to the Dolphin game in particular, And even at, I'll say this, the game in Buffalo, I thought he was uneasy, uncomfortable at the outset of that game. And there, and obviously there was frustration that spilled over when he got to the sideline with Josh. So he hasn't seen things as well the last few weeks, but I'm not sure how much of that is strictly Tom Brady and a slip in his performance mm-hmm. or some health issue or the inability of the offense right now, particularly on the outside, to get people open. We haven't, outside of Rob Gronkowski, seen a Patriot emerge as a consistent pass-catching threat.
You don't think he was just flat-out missing guys in the first half last week? I thought he was flat-out missing people in the first half.
I thought he was off in the first half.
He was off a bit, yeah.
But I do understand what Bob's point is. The offense has sort of become Rob Gronkowski. And, you know, it's Brady the Gronk. And you wonder...
And, James, and Deion Lewis.
How much of that has sort of developed from Brady's lack of ability to get the ball to other guys? Or, you know... The other guys just haven't really stepped up and fit in. Brandon Cooks being, you know, one of the first ones to come to mind. He's been really quiet now for several games. And it started with that Miami Monday mm-hmm. night game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe teams have sort of figured out how to
So you think
defend
it's the people
him.
Around him. It's not... Can you?
Oh, no, no. Brady hasn't been great.
Okay, so
it's
can,
not just that.
Yeah. So what sort of rationale can we play up? Is it the injury factor? Is it the age factor? Is it... sort of that, it you know, scratchiness, or again, whatever you want to call it, between he and Belichick and Alex Guerrero, and he hasn't had his guy there on the road the last several weeks, and that whole thing, I mean, what would you attribute it to?
Well, I think the last part is especially the longer it's gone on, I think the less relevant that becomes to the performance in the game, once the game starts and his performance in the game. I think when you look at the offense, though, and I don't want to use injuries as an excuse, but take the second half of the Super Bowl last year. No Julian Edelman now, no Malcolm Mitchell, Chris Hogan. Those were three primary guys in the second half of that game that Brady went to in engineering that comeback. And the ability or inability
but
to
add in Gronk.
And add in Gronk.
Who wasn't on
right,
that.
Right, but Marlies Martellus Bennett caught a couple of big passes in that game, at least one in particular that got them to the 7-yard line when they kicked the field goal by Gostkowski. But you're right, Gronk over the course of last week, it's almost been like a one-man wrecking crew out there where he's become so reliant on
Unbelievable.
Gronk.
Unbelievable.
Now, Danny Amendola has had prominence, but first half of Pittsburgh, not in the second half of the Pittsburgh game. Last week, a little bit more than the previous week. But we're not seeing the consistent ability to hit passes on those slants, those backside plays, those comeback routes outside the numbers that he was able to connect with Mitchell last year, somewhat to Hogan. We're not seeing the stuff underneath to Amendola like we saw in the past with Danny and Edelman. And I think because they've become less multidimensional in the passing game, it's enabled these teams to drop down that extra defender and muddy the middle and play that so-called robber coverage.
So again, nothing to do with, again, injury. So, I mean, give me
I'm
more
a
than
worried.
Just...
I'm a little worried about the whole package. And I agree with what Bob is talking about. There's no question that Hogan is factoring into this. And, Malcolm Mitchell, he just comes back to practice now. I think there's a correlation there. He hasn't played all year long, and now you're going to say, well, we're going to use that last designated to return spot because we're not sure about Hogan. And we're not sure we like what we see with Cooks. And really, right now, Kenny Britt's here. Philip Dorsett's here. We don't know if we can rely on those guys. I think they're looking for another guy. They know they have Gronk. They know that they have Cooks to make some plays, but not consistently. And then it's the running game. And even the running backs have been banged up a little bit. White's, missed the last game. Burkhead, who was making some plays for them, missed the last game. So I think they're searching a little bit, and I do think that Tom specifically, his health has not been great.
Yeah, and I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. And I wonder what your thoughts are on this too, Paul. I mean, I think back like the bye week, and coming out of that, I expected more of a role for a Philip Dorsett, and it hasn't developed.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, they really put an accent on speed in the offseason. They wanted to be faster. Do they have guys that can win on routes other than get by people on that? And I'm talking about Cooks and
Dorsett.
That's
the thing I've been most disappointed in lately with Cooks, because I thought that's what they got him for. Is to be a guy, a man beater, a guy that could get off, get downfield. And he has made some plays downfield.
And there was an overthrow last week when he got open.
Yeah, it hasn't been a disaster. He's a 1,000-yard receiver. Right. But I don't think the consistency has been there.
Quickly, in the minute we have left, Bob, Garoppolo turns out to be a really good player in San Francisco, does that make the Patriots look good or does it make them look bad?
I think both. I think it looks good because they hit on the quarterback of the future. Sorry.
Doesn't matter who wins and loses.
I taught him how to get it done in here.
It's just
Bob
about
and
the
I
process.
Talk about these things.
Home runs are overrated. Dang, that 13 teams.
So
when's truck day?
It makes him look so. To me, it makes him look good because
I think it makes you look good. But on the other hand, you know, you traded away a potential franchise quarterback, a young quarterback, and the return.
It makes Bill look good. Let me tell you this: it makes Bill look good. That boy, he picked another one. You know, he had the next guy, and I think we're all going to give Bill the benefit of the doubt. Well, Bill would have kept him. But the owner stepped in, or, you know, Brady's play, you know, like, to me, Bill's a big winner if Garoppolo goes out and plays really well.
I think Bill's going to win no matter what.
I
think if he doesn't play well out there, I think he's, well, you know, we traded him for a second round pick. You know?
But this is just my personal opinion.
What were you expecting?
You know, I think if there's anyone in pro sports who would have moved on from Brady, it's Bill Belichick.
Yep.
And if it were totally up to him, if he owned the team, it might be Garoppolo over Brady. So when Bill says it, if Bill ever goes to that, well, I had the guy, and I had to trade him. I'm frankly going to believe him.
But here's the way I look at it. Two things. One, we're talking about Tom Brady being sub Tom Brady standard. He's going to win the MVP in all likelihood, unless the momentum for Todd Gurley overtakes him in the end. We're still talking about the guy who's going to be the MVP. He's coming off a Super Bowl MVP, and is leading this team in position to be the number one seed going in, and a team that most people believe, I think, should be in the Super Bowl once again, and still has on the horizon a couple of more years at least, I think, of very productive play at the quarterback position. He's a guy they're going to build a statue of down the road. In my opinion, if you're ever going to err on the side of too late as opposed to too early, Tom Brady is the guy you do it for.
Okay,
he
Bobby.
Gets the benefit of the doubt, in my opinion.
That's fair enough. We'll hear your call Sunday at 1 with Zoe. Thanks again for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
Okay.
You too, Bob.
Happy New Year to you and yours. Here's McCarthy with an update, then we're right back. As promised, here's Corey and Walpole on the Celts. Go ahead, Corey.
Listen, Perilla, I have a few issues with your argument on Jason Tatum. Simmons, he takes many more shots than Tatum does, and Tatum, same amount of points scored.
Right.
So I think.
Right. It's much harder to do what Simmons does than what Tatum does.
Tatum's not getting asked to carry the load.
Exactly.
And he's putting up these numbers.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly my point. So we're actually in agreement.
So
Tatum's team is much, much better.
Corey doesn't get it.
Yeah. I haven't watched both guys. I'm not telling you who the Rookie of the Year is, and I want to reiterate, I don't care who the Rookie of the Year is.
I definitely don't know who it is, and I definitely don't care.
It could be Markkanen, for all I know, in Chicago. I have no clue. I have no idea, and I don't really have any interest in who wins the award. All I'm telling you is Tatum he's been great, but he also has a very rare thing for a rookie to come into the league and play significant minutes for a team that wins a lot of games, and that, to me, is easier. You're a complimentary piece of a already well-established machine. They're a good team. And I think when you – Matt and I were talking about it earlier. When you go 7-for-9, yeah, I'm not taking the credit away from making most of the shots. How many times do you see him, you know, coming off two screens, taking a three on the move with a guy in his face?
He's open a lot.
They pass it around, and he's knocking down shots 50%. Well, I think it's just a shade under 50% now on threes. Give him a lot of credit for that, but it's much more difficult to do what Ben Simmons has to do in Philadelphia, especially on those nights that Embiid is not playing.
Jim in Manchester on the Pats. Hi, Jim.
Yes, Happy New Year, Mike and Paul.
Thank you.
I just want to have your input on if the Patriots and Steelers meet for the AFC again, which no doubt they will. How much of an influence James Harrison will have on that game?
None.
If he has any extra incentive against Pittsburgh.
He will, but I think he's cashed. Unless this thing, you know, stupid me. I thought of him as a situational pass rusher. But if you're telling me he's going to come in and set the edge and he can do a better job than Lee, who? What's the guy's name?
Eric Lee.
Eric Lee. And, you know, the schmuckolas that they've had out there, the Cassius March.
Right. He took Cassius March's
part. Right, exactly. So if you're telling me that he's an upgrade from that, okay, maybe.
I'm hoping. I haven't seen him play yet.
I'm
not to go all Bill Belichick on you. We'll see.
Okay, I mean, so he might be highly motivated. What if he can't play? I don't care how much he wants it. If he can't run anymore, what's the point?
Right.
And this whole thing about him giving you information, would you please? Like, of all the teams the Pats need information on, the Steelers are not one of them. They've won 11
James
of the
Harrison
last 12.
Is going to Tom Brady for, for information on Pittsburgh.
That's what I said. Brady knows more about the Steelers defense than Harrison does. So would you stop with that, too? And I also, you know, read, I think the Globe dropped a line, like, he can bring veteran leadership, which is a good laugh. That's a joke, too. If you need that asshat to give you veteran leadership, then your veteran leadership sucks. And, by the way, it doesn't. Your veteran leadership's fine. But anyway, that's just my Harrison thing.
Yeah, I don't think he'll have. I think it was a good signing because, they, quite frankly, they need help in the front seven.
Okay, but that matchup. So Pittsburgh gave a much better game than I thought they would. Pat should have lost it. I mean, you could certainly make that claim that it easily could have been a loss. I was not expecting that. Do you give Pittsburgh a sniff here in the rematch?
And you know, if you ask me,
let me answer my own question. I still don't know how they get past the coaching deficit, because that's what, you know, that got him last game.
But
the
only
thing, next one.
See, I have mixed feelings on that particular element of it. But I would say, if you asked me on the Monday after the game, I said no, I don't give them a sniff. I said that one's gonna leave a mark. That's going to stick with them, and they're going to be in trouble for that. However, as time has gone on, I think they handled it as poorly as you could. They continue to talk about it, but then they took care of business in the game that they should have won the way they did on Christmas Day. This game really doesn't matter. The Jets are going to roll over for the Patriots, and it's not going to matter what Pittsburgh does. But I do now look at the game, and I try to take away all the emotion, take away all those intangibles of what you're talking about. They had a pretty good game plan in that game.
They did.
They offensively, they said, let's try to shorten the game a little bit. Let's mix the run and the pass. They didn't just rely on Bell, which you and I always hate. Like, yep. You know, these teams, they come in and they think they're going to just run the ball 38 times for 400 yards, and it never works that way.
Keep Brady off the field.
They ran it, and they threw it, and they had success doing both. They converted on third down. They chewed up a lot of clock, and they did keep Brady off the field for large portions of that game. And they made a couple of really tactical mistakes at the worst possible times, and even before that last drive.
Well, but like, stop me when you've heard that before.
Right.
Said Pete Carroll, said Dan Quinn, said most teams, a few tactical mistakes when it matters most.
Right.
I just don't have faith that...
But if I'm going to be honest, I'm going to say, yeah, I do give them a sniff to win that game. Because I think that man for man, they match up
with
the Patriots.
Oh, they have the talent to do it. No question
They have the talent to do it, and I think that they... I think they look at that as a lost opportunity, and I think sometimes you get a team like that, they come back, and they're ready to fix their mistakes. Now, you know, if the Patriots win the rematch, you know, 33-17, am I going to come in here the following Wednesday with you guys and say I'm stunned? No, I won't be. But I give the Steelers a chance in that game. I think they have the ability to do it.
It's an Agenda Free Friday. Our long commercial-free segment is next. I'm going to give you something away for free. Okay, a free giveaway coming up next, and we'll do a little year in review, as it is the last Felger and Maz show here in 2017. Year in review on Felger and Maz coming up next.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Giveaway coming up here for you in a few minutes. Right back to your phones. Dakota in Braintree wants to talk to you about Jason Tatum. Go ahead, Dakota.
Before I get to Tatum, the whole Harden thing with Smart last night, if you watch before the first offensive foul right near the end of the game, Harden walks and gets in Smart's face with the ball after a Celtics-made basket, and Tony Brothers gets in between them and basically says something to Harden there.
Right.
And then the next thing that happens, boom. So he probably gave him a warning. So anything that was close, he was going to call it.
Absolutely.
That's probably what happened. I'm with you, Dakota.
Absolutely. This is all on Harden. I agree.
Yep. And okay, now over to you, Paul. Okay. Listen, you're great with the Patriots, but hearing you talk about...
Adequate.
Ben Simmons compared to Tatum. Now, listen,
Listen,
who would I rather have?
Can I just stop for a second, Dakota? I'm not comparing the two players. I'm just telling you that it's easier to be a good impact player on a good team than it is a mediocre one. I'm not telling you about Ben Simmons and how good he is.
Okay.
He might be a product of just the NBA and all kinds of plastic numbers. There's a lot of guys in that league that I wouldn't take on my team in a heartbeat that put up great numbers.
Okay.
You might be right. Ben Simmons stinks, and I'm wrong.
Okay, all right. Let's remove the Ben Simmons versus Tatum and just go off of what you just said. It couldn't be more wrong, okay? Take the likes of any player that when the Celtics were terrible, guys used to put up big numbers, and you never heard from him again, okay? I'm not saying that Ben Simmons is a terrible player, but it's a lot easier for Ben Simmons to be this good on a bad team or a team not as good as the number one, number two, number three seed in the East. What Tatum's doing is that much tougher. He's on a team ranked number one, two, or three in the starting lineup. Now, with Jaylen Brown out, is pretty much the number two scorer on their team behind Kyrie. What Tatum has to do is actually go up against teams that come to beat the Celtics night in and night out. Ben Simmons
and who are they coming to stop?
His team has the ball.
Who are they coming to stop?
Dakota. Who are the opponents coming to stop?
They're coming to stop the Celtics as a team.
No, you know the answer.
Who are they coming to stop?
You know the answer. So go ahead. He had his say.
I mean, Kyrie is the answer, right? So don't tell me the other team is focused on stopping Jason Tatum. They're not. Now, as we move forward here, and this sort of great start to his rookie season is now, this is a great player, that will start to change. And he'll get more of a focus, and we'll see how Tatum reacts to that. I think he's terrific. I don't have anything bad to say about Jason Tatum.
You're just saying role. The role is different, and the role in some ways is easier.
Exactly. In a lot of ways. I mean, Ben Simmons, when Embiid is not playing, is the focal point of the other team. We stop Ben Simmons, we win this game.
Okay. Bruins
now,
thought,
when Embiid plays, that's a little different.
Bruins thought here on Agenda Free Friday. Go ahead, John.
Yes,
John and Lowell.
Yeah, my question is, why did they start Hudobin over Tuca against the Caps after he got shelled the last time? Is it no Tuca back-to-back?
So I don't think that
they
Hudobin...
don't want the Caps to see Tuca.
No, let me tell you. I think Hudobin played the last Capitals game and was okay. They lost because his team just can't beat the Caps. But
Tuca can't.
And Tuca's a puddle against the Caps.
Right.
Look at Tuca versus Holpe. It's a disaster. It's sort of like Tuca versus Montreal, which I'll get to in a second. So I think in some ways they're trying to protect Rask from the Capitals, which, again, it's tough when you pay a guy $7 million a year and he's the third highest paid goalie in the league and you got to protect him, but I think that's part of it. Hudobin has better numbers against the Caps, and so that's why they went there. I think they also looked and said Ottawa and Washington. Well, Ottawa's in our division, and that's a more winnable game, so let's bank those 2 points with Rask, and then we'll just sort against
the
Rask. Yeah,
they could have flipped that around. I see what your point is, but I don't have any problem with it. And by the way, I thought Hudobin played
excellent,
a really, really solid game
outstanding last night. He was great. Goaltending wasn't the issue, and I thought Holpe was great in the game, too. Holpe, I still think, owns that ass. I think he owns you. So that's why I think the goalie thing happened last night. But I mentioned Rask in Montreal. So this is now, like, even though Cassidy frustrated, I thought Cassidy blew some things last night, and I think they blew it last night. That was their one chance to get over the hump there against Washington. They blew it, but for the most, they still got a point. They still, what impressed me the most is they went back up 3-2 in the third period and were, you know, looking like they were going to do it there. So I still think overall it was an okay night for them.
That was a garbage goal they allowed two to tie.
Oh, brutal. Brutal, but still, it wasn't like this complete capitulation that we've gotten in the past against the Capitals. They were right there.
No, I agree.
All right. Next threshold, Montreal. In the span of 8 days, I think you play them 3 times in 8 days in January. Which is just...
You're off mic, Mike.
I know.
Mike.
I'm pulling out my calendar. I know. Hold on.
and the Canadians aren't... Well,
so hold on.
It's still Montreal.
So Montreal's 10 points behind you, and you have 2 games in hand. All right, so that's a nice, comfy lead there against the Canadiens for third place in the division. We're not even dinking around with a wild card. So Montreal I care about because I hate them, but also they're the next team behind you in the standing. So you're 10 points up with 2 games in hand. That is a command. You cannot blow that lead. I am sorry. We're almost at the midpoint of the year.
I'm more focused on Toronto for two.
Right, exactly. But you cannot. If Montreal's 10 points behind you with 2 games in hand for you, and you're coming up on the midpoint of the season, you cannot blow that lead, all right? But if you are going to blow it, it comes within an 8-day stretch in January. You play them 3 times. And Tuca sucks against the Canadiens. So this is, like, to me, the next signpost and the next threshold for this team and for Rask.
For him, too, because he's back. This is the guy.
Rask is playing well.
Yeah, but he's played really, really well. This is the guy that we all said, you know, he's not that guy anymore. This is that guy again. So he needs to continue that against Montreal.
So let's see it in that.
Yeah, against everybody.
To me, that's the next stretch. Coming up in a couple weeks, you can play Montreal, bang, bang, bang. I want Rask to get most, if not all, of those games. And you got to bank those points. And then you'll show. And then I'll, you know, I'll breathe a little bit easier and say, okay, you're really on to something.
Right.
I'm still not totally there. Here's a giveaway. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Caller 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line, which is 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom. StopandShop.com. Good luck on the giveaway. No commercials, just an update here from McCarthy. And then we've got Christopher Gasper in our studio.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Oh, too much. Ah, there it is. Got to get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay, and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you? And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.